This is the Detroit Sports Podcast Network.
The biggest icon in podcasting.
Welcome in, everybody, to this week's edition of Doc and Jock. I am the Doc, John McEnroe. Joining me, as always, my guy Adam, the Jock Strozinski. Boy, am I excited for this week's podcast. The Combine is completed. We can now recap who should join this Detroit Lions roster after a great weekend of football. It was great to watch and see some guys do their thing, make their best efforts, make their best pitches to join NFL rosters. It was real interesting, a real spectacle in Indy. We'll talk about that in the second half of the podcast. To start, we got to talk about the Red Wings. We know last week, of course, Doc and Jock are going to talk about a team that was on fire. And the second that Doc and Jock had to talk about the Red Wings, they go in the tank. And it was fucking hilarious to see that one of the first segments we do of 2024 talking about the Wings and what they're doing. They're on fire, making a playoff push clear, making maybe a push to catch Toronto. And the last couple games really, I think, to Adam and myself, highlighted that some moves need to be made, not only to just get to the postseason, but to have an opportunity to win a round or two. So we're going to talk about that to kick things off. Because what's happening? How disappointed are you that after a good stretch, the Wings kind of did not look like a real competitive playoff team against some good teams in the NHL?
I mean, that's how it always goes, right? You and I will sit there, we'll praise the team, and we'll wax poetic about it. And then next thing you know, boom, they're in the tank. They look horrible. They look as mortal as possible. And that's what happened with the Red Wings. It is incredibly disappointing, especially if you took some time and you got to see the game over the weekend. I believe it was on Sunday. They played the Florida Panthers, and it was a manhandling by Florida. Like, they were out physicaled. They were beat up on the score sheet. They were beat up everywhere. And I think that game itself really kind of tells you how far away this team is. And the funny thing is, it was basically a year ago, maybe 2 weeks ago, where the Red Wings went on that six-game losing streak, and it really defined their season last year. You fast forward 2 weeks, and it was against those same Florida Panthers that really cemented their season last year. It was against those same Florida Panthers where you really see how far this team is. Like, Florida has a really, really good team. Florida is a team that'll be contending for a Stanley Cup. And you just got manhandled 4-0 this weekend at home, and you were bullied all over the place. They got underneath your skin. You took some bad penalties. You couldn't get your special teams units going. They took advantage on the power plays. They beat you up all over the ice. So it gives you a little bit of an idea of how far away this team is. And last week when we were talking, I don't think either one of us said that they were making the Stanley Cup Finals, but we both believed that they were going to get into the playoffs and they were going to make some noise. And you fast forward a week, and I think you see that this team needs a couple more pieces, whether it be a forward to help out. You're dealing with a loss of your captain, and we're going to talk about that and how serious that could be. Or whether you need to add a grizzled defenseman, somebody who can get in there and kind of mix it up when you are getting physical and you are getting pushed around and you are getting beat up. And because of that, I've got a couple of guys. I want to run a couple guys by you that I've kind of gone through. I've looked at guys that should be available at the trade deadline and kind of where I think they would fit on this team. Now, the big issue for Detroit right now defensively is you've got a bit of a logjam on the defensive side, right? If you want Simon Edmundson to come up, you've got two guys ahead of him, right? Whether it's a guy like Olli Maatta or whether it's a guy like Justin Kroll. Justin Kroll's not even playing right now. He's basically sidelined, and they're going to try to figure out what to do with him. Going into this trade deadline, don't be surprised if the Wings end up trading a defenseman or trading two defensemen. But I think you need to get some help on that back line. I think you are a little bit deficient. I think your top three are really good. I think you need a fourth or fifth defenseman. And starting there, there's a guy out of Calgary, Noah Hakanen. He's a big lefty D. He's a little bit younger. The guy can score. The guy's got a shot. He can make plays. This is a guy, I'm not sure what it would cost to get him, But if Steve Eisenman was looking to add a bit of a scoring punch on that back line, somebody who could slot in that top four, this is a guy who would fit nicely, probably fit into your top two, honestly. And then if you're looking for a guy who has a little bit more time on his contract, because again, a lot of these guys that are going to be traded at the deadline don't have a ton of time left on their contracts. So you're going to be giving something to get something, and it'll be for a limited time. Noah Hakkinen is going to be an unrestricted free agent at the end of this year. So you'll be giving something up, and you might lose him later on. But out of Colorado, there's a guy, Bowen Bram, another big lefty. He's a little bit younger. He can score as well. He's got, I believe, 1 year left on his contract. This is a guy who I think could come in, fit nicely, and be able to be a serviceable second line defensive pair with whomever you want to put him with. If you're looking for somebody who might be a little bit cheaper, there's a guy like Max Dumba out there. You can go grab him. Guy who's a little bit physical, got a little bit of sandpaper to him, can get a little bit gritty. I think he would really help round out those bottom three defensemen. But again, you got to move two guys to create some room. And if Seidman Edmondson's coming up, you're going to have to move a couple of other guys around. Now, I think going into the playoffs, you always want to have a bit of a girth of talent. And you always want to have one or two extra guys that you can roll out there for your defense, because injuries do happen. Playoff time, things do tighten up. Things do get a little bit more chippy. And if you get a guy who's hot, you can roll him in, and you can sideline whomever isn't playing up to snuff. If you look at forwards, though, big name out there, Jake Guentzel, plays for Pittsburgh. This is a guy who been a lot of trade rumors, a lot of speculation. Dylan Larkin's going to be sidelined for a little bit. This is a guy who you can bring in. He's got a ton of big game playoff experience. You can bring him in. He can kind of help steady the ship, especially with those offensive pairings. This is a guy who would work nice in your top six, top seven or eight offensive forwards. You can slide him in and he would be just fine. If you're looking for a little bit more sandpaper, a little bit more grit, you want a guy who would be more of a checking forward. There's a guy like Cal Clutterbuck or Matt Martin out of there from the New York Islanders. These two guys I feel like could fit in for your bottom six. They're a little bit of a grinder type. They can score goals. These are two forwards that I think if you're looking to add a little bit of beef and be able to kind of mix it up, those are two guys that I would look at. So you have options. Like there are teams that are going to be looking to make trades. I think with the Red Wings, they're in a really interesting spot because, like I said, they've got this bit of a log jam with their defense right now. So you're going to have to move a couple of pieces. You're going to have to make some room, especially if you're looking to bring some of the guys up from Grand Rapids. You're going to have to move around a couple of guys. I think right now, Gostisbehere is on a one-year deal. So if somebody's going to get traded, it'll probably be him. And he's one of your better offensive defensemen. So it kind of comes down to, like, what do you want to do? And I think really and truly for the Red Wings right now, Steve Yzerman has to figure out what he wants to do this year. He has to be able to figure out what he believes the ceiling is for this team. You don't want to go into the trade deadline and really mortgage your future for this one season. You don't want to go and give up guys who are going to help you down the line just so you can make a bit of a playoff run this year. If Steve Yzerman doesn't believe this team is a cup contending team, there's no reason to give up future assets. There's no reason to trade away some of these young guys that they have. I know a lot of people are talking about trading away a guy like a Berggren. Berggren could be part of that young core that you can work in, part of that young core that should be getting some ice time coming up here real soon. Do you really want to trade him away if he believes this team doesn't have a higher ceiling than getting to the second round of the playoffs? Even if they don't get that far, do you want to give up a guy who could possibly be part of your future core? I don't think you do. So I think this really is going to come down to Steve Yzerman. I believe he's got a plan. Trade deadline is on Friday. So I think he has an idea of what this team is going to be, and he is going to lean into that. So we will find out a lot more about what Steve Yzerman believes this team is going to be come Friday, come Saturday, come Sunday, when we're seeing a bit of a turnover with this roster, if anybody gets traded or if they bring anybody in. But the next couple of days are going to be really, really telling for this Detroit team and really going to tell the fan base what Steve Eiserman believes this team's going to be. And I believe they only have one game before the trade deadline. So there's not like there's going to be a lot more tape out there. You kind of know what this team's going to be after this game this past Sunday against the Florida Panthers. So Steve Eiserman, obviously, constantly calculating, constantly trying to figure out the best moves for this roster. And at this moment in time, he's tasked with a really tough decision. Where do you think this team ends this year? Like, where do you think they finish? And is it worth it to give up some future assets, or is it worth it to make wholesale changes in this locker room? And it'll be one of those things that we're kind of stuck in a tough spot. We've got to wait and see. If it was up to me, Noah Hanifin from Calgary, that would be a guy I would go out and target. If you can get a guy like Jake Guentzel, go get him all day long. Those two guys, I think, really help solidify both that back and that front end. You might be able to work out a deal with the defenseman from Calgary. And if you're able to do that, that sets you up even better for next year. So Eiserman's got some work to do. It'll be interesting to see what happens with this recent swoon that they've had, with this little bit of lackluster play. And really, truly, the Florida game, I think, really highlighted some of the woes of this team. Has that scared you at all going into the trade deadline? Has your opinion changed? I know last week we were talking, and I think we both agreed that this team should be a buyer at the trade deadline. Has your confidence level kind of moved a little bit? And have you backed off that? Do you think this team will be more of a seller at the trade deadline after a couple of not so great games, games where they were really kind of manhandled?
Yeah, no doubt. And it's interesting because before the season at the Lions, it was funny. I was talking to one of the TV guys and I just joked around. I said, 97 points, huh? And he looked at me with like a look of like, are you fucking crazy, Homer? And now that they've gotten off to this pace and you added Alex DeBrincat, which everybody loved, you saw the scoring, you got really four lines that can put the puck in. Now they've been cold as of late when you watch them, but in the end, this is a team that is a playoff team. So for me, the ceiling was about 97 points, maybe a first round appearance. Maybe you get past your first round opponent and get into the second round, but feeling like the defense wasn't good enough, you need a little bit more physicality. And then when you looked at the goaltending, it was a lot of question marks there. So for me, the expectations weren't, it was basically just get to the postseason and see what happens. Kind of like the Lions, and anything after that is gravy. But now that you're at this point and you see what your offense is capable of doing, I would say that everybody that you've mentioned definitely can upgrade the wings. And that's first step, is that I'm glad it happened because it highlights that, hey, moves got to be made. We can't just rest on our laurels. We can't just go into the postseason with what we've got. And for the first time, I think in nearly 400 episodes, the Red Wings are going to be buyers, because every single time at this time of year, we would talk about four or five guys that were departing to other teams for draft picks. But this time, we have an opportunity to get more players here. And if they don't, I think just looking at it, if you're looking at physicality, you got a young cat down in Grand Rapids, over 6 foot tall defenseman in Simon Edvinson that people are really raving about, that could come up here and do some things if you want to get him some more experience and maybe even throw him into the fire. So there are options. And it's tough, though, because the position that you're looking at that you really need to stand up is goaltending. And you're just, unfortunately, because of injuries, you're just stuck with journeyman. And that's just the way it is. And so for me, I'm not going to be riled up or angry or scared, per se. What bothered me clearly is Dylan Larkin going down. The timing is terrible. He's having a great season, and it just stinks. And probably, I would argue, is probably wildly underrated and unheralded in these parts because of what the Lions have done. And you're starting to see at the Red Wings games, you hear Jared Goff chants. I'm curious, because I know your concern level and things like that, but just a quick sidebar. Are you upset, frustrated that Red Wings fans are chanting Jared Goff? Because a couple of media members came out and said, look, that's kind of disrespectful and kind of corny. Their season's done, and this is the Red Wings barn. Why don't you chant throughout the game for the hometown squad? And it caused a big uproar, nice, interesting debate. To me, I don't care. As long as there's some energy in the crowd and the crowd's into it, I don't care what they chant. As long as they mix in some Let's Go Red Wings chant, which they always do. They're definitely a wild bunch there at LCA. I can understand where those that might not like it, but I don't have a big problem with it.
Yeah, I don't really have a big problem with it either. I mean, it's one of those things where you're a Detroit fan. You're going to root for your Detroit team. Now, is there a time and a place to root for the Lions? Yeah, I think so. And I think that time and place is at Ford Field, probably on a Sunday at 1 or on a Monday night at 8 or, you know, a Sunday night at 8. So I do think there's a time and a place to do it. I don't necessarily think you need to keep doing it. I think as this season stretches on for the Red Wings and as the Red Wings continue to play well, because I do think this is just a little bit of a slump right now. I think they will get back on track. And yeah, we've got to break into to some Dylan Larkin injury concerns and conversation there. But I think this team will get it figured out. And with all that being said, I don't think you need to be doing this as this team's making this push into the playoffs. I don't necessarily think that is the time or the place for it. It doesn't really bother me, but I just don't think it's necessary at the same time. If I was a Red Wings fan, or if I was a Red Wing player, I should say, I would kind of be like scratching my head, and be like, what's the point? What's the purpose? Like, you should be our fans, getting us geared up. You should be cheering for us. I mean, you've got a guy like DeBrincat who's been playing out of his mind. You got a guy like Kane who's been an absolute stud since he's come over and joined this team. You got a guy like Mo Sider who's a big physical defenseman who can do a lot of great things. You've got guys on this team. You know, one of my favorite Red Wings, he's a guy who doesn't get, I guess, a lot of praise, but he's a guy who does a lot of little things. And I always like the guys who do a lot of little things. Is a guy like Robbie Fabbri. Robbie Fabbri has been on this team now, I think, for maybe 4 years. And it seems like he's always kind of in the mix. He's always kind of doing the right thing. It's, you know, he doesn't do he doesn't have that big spectacular play, right? Like that Patrick Kane goal in Chicago. He doesn't have that. But he's a guy who goes out there, grinds it out along the boards, digs the puck out, makes a play in front of the net, gets a puck on net, will score a big time goal here and there. A guy who you can put out there and he makes a solid defensive play that helps force a turnover that could lead to a goal. He does all these little things. And, you know, if I was in that guy's shoes, I would be like, what the hell else do we got to do? You know, like, we're making great strides here. This is a team that honestly, if you look at where they were at last year compared to this year, this team is light years ahead of where it was last year. This team looks like it's going to take that next big step, and it looks like it's going to get into the playoffs. And I still contend this is going to be a dangerous team. I still contend that this team is going to make some noise when they get there. And look, we still got to get through this trade deadline that's coming up on Friday. And I think they do add to this team. I think there'll be a subtraction or two, but I do believe that they continue to add. And I think the thing that's going to help force them to add is Dylan Larkin dealing with his injury. He's going to be sidelined for up to 2 weeks. You need to kind of find a steadying force for that front line, right? You need to go out. You need to add a guy who can kind of make up some of that point differential that Larkin's not going to have. So whether that's calling a guy up like a Bergeron, like we've talked about earlier, or maybe it's going out making a trade for a Jake Guentzel. You know, I think there are guys that you can add that will help offset what is going to be lost with Dylan Larkin. But all that being said, I think you losing your captain this late in the season and for this many weeks, I think you have to be concerned about that. And I think that is probably the more pressing concern than the fans chanting for Detroit Lions players at LCA. Where are you at with the concern for Dylan Larkin? Is it a big deal, little deal, no deal? Do you think this team has the ability to weather this 2 week storm that they're going to have to go through?
Yeah, I do. I do think that they got a lot of scoring. It may take a dip, but you recognize the emergence of Patrick Kane, who we raved about mm-hmm. last week. You see a guy that kind of has just been, you know, really there were question marks regarding his ability to come back from that hip surgery, and crazy, he just came back and has been on fire, and you realize double-digit goals in such a short time span, you realize, okay, this is an individual that, man, veteran leader and created great memories in Chicago and had a dream return, and now you can kind of rely on him a little bit, veteran leadership. And I just love the evenly distributed scoring. I was concerned a little bit about DeBrincat's scoring drought, but now he's kind of turned it around, and that's kind of how it always goes. You don't really worry about guys that are prolific in terms of scoring, and Alex DeBrincat, I just think you can trust him. That when the time comes, when he heats up, boy, one of the prolific scorers in the NHL, and you pair him with his best bud, his best line mate, oh my goodness. So I expect this week there'll be a turnaround. And that's kind of how it goes in the NHL. You have these peaks and valleys. You saw the way in which they were playing. They were kind of getting a little bit lucky that 2-1 game against Colorado. You recognize they've been playing some tough playoff matchups in regards to the way in which the games have gone. So those are all positive experiences. And I just hope that the injury to Dylan Larkin doesn't cause like a negative momentum swing. I don't think it will. I think I'm really like Coach Lalonde. I think that you start to see improvement from everybody. You start to see development. When there's issues arise, you start to see them get corrected. And I think that this is kind of one of those locker rooms and situations in which the roster is kind of policing itself. It's a a good group of guys. And you look at Kopp, you look at JT Comfort, you look at a lot of these guys. I think that there's enough to pick up the slack and to distribute everything moving forward. So I'm not terribly concerned. And like I said, I just think that you just hope that Steve Yzerman sees it and adds one or two more, maybe one more scorer and one more gritty defender that will come in. And I think what you're seeing is, and what you're hearing across town and stuff you read is, he's not going to go out and get a rental. He'll get a guy. Mm-hmm. If you go out there and find a guy that's going to have a contract that extends into 2025, that might help as well. One more year beyond 2024. So I don't think a rental is going to be in the Red Wings' future. But at the same time, man, trust in Yzerman's high. He's got this team moving forward. And it took a little bit of time, but there's buzz in the air. And there's excitement. There's a lot of intrigue. Yes.
Here's the thing, too. Like, so this injury with Dylan Larkin, I think it comes at the perfect time. If you look at their schedule for the next coming weeks, right, they've got a game against Colorado. After that, it really lightens up. You're playing Phoenix. You're playing the Golden Knights, which will be a bit of a difficult game, especially since you've got to go out to Las Vegas. But after that, you've got the Sabres again. You've got the Coyotes again. Then you've got the Sabres again. You've got the Penguins, who are going to be sellers at the trade deadline. You've got the Blue Jackets, who are one of the worst teams in the NHL. You've got the Islanders. Yeah, they just beat you, but that's not a good team. And so now we're on the back end of March at this point. Then you're picking up the Predators. You're picking up the Capitals, who you just beat, what, I think it was 8-3 the other day. So your schedule lightens up dramatically towards the back end of – or towards the middle of March all the way to the back end. You've got about, I don't know, 8 games here, maybe 9 games, maybe 10 games – where you should be able to weather this storm and allow Dylan Larkin to get healthy, come back, slot himself back in. If you need to, you can take it slow with him. Give some other guys, some younger guys, a chance to come up and contribute to this team. The way the schedule breaks for you, this really helps, especially with you dealing with some injuries. Honestly, looking at the schedule right now, you've got one, maybe two, maybe three games out of the next, I want to say 12, maybe 14 games, that should really challenge this team, really challenge this team. Otherwise, this team should be able to take advantage of their schedule coming up through March. And then once you get into April, I mean, it's April in the D time, right? So we haven't used that in forever. But the season gets much more condensed then because you're in your final 2 weeks, 3 weeks of the season, and it's you're making that push for the playoffs. So I think the way the schedule breaks for this team, it really helps them. They've got to win a couple of these games. You do that, you get some distance in the standings, and you can move up. If you look at the standings right now as we speak, the Maple Leafs are only a couple of points ahead. We know the Maple Leafs are classic choke artists. They usually bobble the ball towards the end of the finish line here. Honestly, Wings have a little more than – they have about 20 games left. I think the Wings can win 75% of these games. And if you do that, you're going to be in a really good spot as you go into the playoffs.
Yeah, can't wait to see it. It's a team that I think people are ready to rally behind. You're starting to see some flags around town. And it's at that perfect time after football season. And many people think, okay, the Tigers are developing. They're basically, in essence, like last year's Red Wings team. A lot of young cats, a lot of young potential, but no real expectation to do anything. So now there's expectations for this Red Wings team that they can finally make a push and do something productive in a season in which you're starting to see good play. You're starting to see the team gel and play and grow together over the last few months. And yeah, it's a setback for Dylan Larkin, but not to the point where you think it's going to be something that will hinder his appearance in the postseason or anything like that. So like you said, maybe the timing is just right for a little break, a little breather for the captain, but at the same time, everybody else has got to step up, and then you got to count on the captain to just supplement. That's all you need. A little bit more salt and pepper to this group, and that'll make everything just that much better. Now, turning our attention to the combine, everything, I'm curious, what was your main takeaways? How much of it did you take in? Did you get in your dose, your annual dose of the Underwear Olympics? I know that You definitely like to take in all the action, all the graphics, all the testing, and boy, it's I watched a lot of it this year, more probably than in years past. I thought the graphics were great. I thought the intel was very great. I thought that, man, when you look at the breakup of the way in which the schedule went, I thought it flowed perfectly and just enough where you get into the weekend and you're like, okay, there's a lot of talk here about different players. And obviously with a keen eye on the Lions, who would help? I'm curious, how much did you take in and who did you fall in love with? Who are you crushing on from the combine? Because there were a lot of crazy things that happened. And first and foremost, what are these people putting in the water, man? The speed level of a lot of these athletes is crazy. Everybody's running faster, stronger, and you're like, holy cow. The level of athletes nowadays is sick. Their training regimen is so tight, so amazing, that you got a guy in Xavier Worthy that broke the record as the fastest combine human in history. It was crazy, but there was a lot of positivity to take in. A lot of players that you kind of scratch, a lot of players that you put your pen to paper and go, that's probably a Brad Holmes guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of guys like that. And I think the one thing that I really took out of this draft is stacked at the top. You can make a case for probably the top 15 guys all possibly going somewhere in the top 10, maybe top 7. So the draft at the top is very, very loaded with a ton of talent. A lot of this, we see this when we have drafts with a lot of QB talent, and there is a ton of QB talent. You know, you've got your big three, right? You got your Caleb Williams, your Drake May, you got your Jaden Daniels. And then you've got this sprinkling of other quarterbacks. You've got a guy like JJ McCarthy, which this is the other big takeaway I had. Very mixed bag on JJ McCarthy, depending on who you listen to, depending on what other people seen. Either JJ is going to be the second coming of Christ in the NFL, or he's just going to be a guy who holds a clipboard. It's really weird. I think he's probably the most divisive guy in this draft right now, because the analysis on him skews so hard to the right and so hard to the left. It's really, really weird. And watching him throw, I think the thing that I took away from it is struggles a little bit throwing to his left. Pretty good throwing to his right, especially with the short and intermediate passes. Tends to struggle. He's got a bit of an arm, right? We didn't really get to see it at Michigan, but he has a bit of an arm, but struggles to put the right amount of touch on the ball for guys to get down the field. So I think where JJ McCarthy falls in this actual draft is going to be incredibly interesting. And he could go as high as 4 or 5, and he could go as low as 2nd, 3rd, maybe 4th round. It's really weird. The critics are very split on this guy. But I feel like the top of the draft is just loaded with guys, right? Like I said, a ton of QB talent. You got your Bo Nix, you got your Michael Penix. Those guys are supposed to go a little bit later on in this first round. After your big three, you've got what, 3 big wide receivers. You've got a tight end who could go in the top 10. You've got a lot of talent up top, not to mention the offensive tackles as well as the cornerbacks. I think a guy who I fell in love with, and it's really 2 guys that I fell in love with, and they play secondary. One, Terrion Arnold. This is a guy out of Alabama, 6'1", 196. This guy is incredibly interesting. He at one moment grabbed a microphone and basically praised his mother. And he seems like a dude who just gets it, right? He seems like a guy that you want to root for, seems like a guy that you hope nothing but the best for him. On top of it, he showed out pretty well at the combine. The guy looks like an athlete. He looks like he can play the role and he can play the position. Another guy that I absolutely fell in love with was a cornerback out of Toledo. What is it? Quinyon Mitchell. Absolutely. The Toledo cornerback is a stud. That guy looks like he's a Brad Holmes guy. He looks like he would fit the bill for this Detroit Lions team. The problem is he's probably going to go somewhere in that top 15. I don't see this guy slipping. Incredibly fast. The guy is incredibly strong. Absolute stud on the field. Like the game tape matches. So this dude to me is an absolute dog. If I had my druthers, that would be who the Detroit Lions would take in that first round. But like I said, I don't believe he's going to be there. But really, it's 2 dudes in the secondary that I absolutely fell in love with, Quinyon Mitchell and Terrion Arnold out of Alabama. So those guys, I think, are fantastic. What was your big takeaway from this combine? And what was your big who are the guys that you fell in love with?
Yeah, absolutely. A guy that maybe could potentially be there for the Lions is Max Melton from Rutgers, cornerback. Get a 4.39 40-yard dash, fourth overall in the vertical jump at 40.5 inches, broad jump first. And I look at it and you say he's potentially projected day two, round three or four. Maybe look at him, Max Melton. To me, my biggest takeaway is the receiver class looks deep. And there's
very deep.
Very deep, high end. You know, for me, obviously Keon Coleman, I think, fits the bill of a big explosive guy that can handle business, but I don't think he's going to be there. And I,
you know what was interesting about him?
Yeah, what's up?
So his 40 speed was not great, right? But he was the fastest guy running through the gauntlet drill.
Yes.
And he wasn't fast by a little bit. He was fast by a lot of it. And there is, we talk about like straight line speed, and that's what your 40 speed does. Your 40 speed doesn't actually necessarily equate on the football field. Not very often anyways, unless you're wide open down the field and you get a straight away where you can run to the end zone. That's about the only time where your 40 speed really matters. It is that football speed that is incredibly interesting and is probably more important than your 40. And he was a absolute stud with his football speed. Going through the gauntlet drill, the guy was crazy fast. Another guy very similar to that, Blake Corum. Blake Corum did not have a great 40 time. A lot of people said his 40 time kind of hurt him. But then you get to see him doing the football drills, footwork stuff, going through – jumping over the bags and then having to cut. He was one of the quickest guys out there. So his football speed, his actual play speed, much quicker than what his 40 time. And that was just a point I wanted to hammer home. Sometimes it's not all about that 40 time. The 40 time is important, especially if you're chasing a guy down, if you're a cornerback, or if you're a running back or a wide receiver and you're open in the open field. But your football speed is what is incredibly important. And that's what translates on the field.
Yeah. So this is interesting because obviously you know that, you know, here at Detroit Sports Podcast and Doc and Jock, we like the sizzle. We like the running backs, the quarterbacks, the wide receivers, the tight ends. But cuz my biggest takeaway, show me the beef, baby. I fell in love with two linemen and you can't go wrong. This is a lineman that if you make a move and you target him and you saw what he did and what he's capable of, I just think that Jackson Powers Johnson is the real deal. He's going to have a great career. Everybody that saw him fell in love with him, definitely showed out. And when you got a burger named after you and you're a foodie, hey, that's a plus in everybody's book. You know, but if you can't get him, a name to pay attention to. I'm probably going to butcher it, but we'll say this. We'll intro him as Penei Sewell's relative, Kingsley Sumatala. And I look at it and I say, holy cow, this guy from BYU looks like somebody that is serious about his business, wants to do things similarly. If you pair him with Penei Sewell, now you're talking about somebody that can be very, very serious. And he's one of the highest rated prospects that BYU had. He's got the great combination when you look at the scouting report of size and strength, 6'5", 326 pounds, hand size of 10 5/8 inches, top five measurements all across the board. So I look at it and I say, whoa, you pair a relative of Penei Sewell, you can get him in a good spot. I think in the drills, many people noted, the scouts did, so I definitely wrote it down. It said, during the field work drills, many scouts and pundits were saying he showed his ability to move in space, his change of direction, and his display of football IQ and ability were showcased. So to me, linemen, I think, are very, very intriguing. And I think that if Brad Holmes decides to move up, then go get the best one. But in line, I think there's a lot of depth that you can look at in this draft to potentially start to shore up if you move on from Jonah Jackson, or you start to add more depth for when Taylor Decker moves on. So in my opinion, cuz, there's a lot of good players that kind of showcase themselves in terms of their speed and their agility and guys that could slot in. So I'll ask you this. If there's one guy that the Lions could trade up for and you'd say, okay, I rest easy, We could trade capital, we could trade a player and make a move, who would that be for? Would it be for Quinyon Mitchell? Because that position is scary. Jeff Okuda fucked it up for my brain, where I say these cornerbacks take forever and these quarterbacks know how to manipulate these young cats, there's not too many Sauce Gardeners in the world. Try to find somebody better or find that person in free agency and let the development happen later on, because Brad Holmes has not drafted a corner in his tenure yet. So the guy that he takes is probably going to be special. And maybe it's Mike Sanderstrill. You know, I know he's undersized and things like that, but he makes plays in Michigan, backyard of the Lions, so we'll see. But I look at it and I say, man, if you go lineman, I know it's not sexy, but it'd be fine for the Lions. And if you do, trade up for Jackson. I think it's great. I think that Powers Johnson can do a lot of different things.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with them trading up for an offensive lineman. I think it really does help this team. If you look at the way this team is built, right, it is a offensive line team. It is a team where they feel like they've got enough on the defensive line. I think we disagree with that, and I think we both agree that they need to add to the defensive line. But I do not have a problem with them adding to their strength, right? Strength on strength. You're just constantly building that offensive line. It allows Jared Goff, who I believe you're going to end up giving a very nice pay increase here very shortly. It allows him to work, allows him to operate, allows that offense to flow the right way. And if you look at the way this team wins games, this team puts a lot of pressure on their offense. And their offense is the reason why they win a lot of games. So I don't necessarily have a problem with that. I think it's a pretty good mindset that you have. For me, there's really two guys that I would have no problem moving up to trade for. Number one, it would be Quinyon Mitchell. I think he's going to be an absolute stud. I also think you can bring him in, and you can kind of bring him in a little bit slowly if you needed to, depending on what his abilities are and how quickly he grasps everything. I think he would pick things up quickly, and I think he'll be just fine. Look, I love Mikey Sanders still. I think he's going to be awesome at the next level. The only thing about that is I think you kind of already have that guy, and I think you might have maybe a better version of that in Brian Branch. Mikey Sanders still is going to be a nickel or a dime cornerback. I don't believe he's going to be a guy that you can put out and have him playing basically man on anybody. I think he's going to have to kind of play in that slot, or he's going to have to play close to the middle of the field. I think that's where he will excel. I think he's going to be fantastic, though, at the next level. But I just don't think you necessarily have a need for him right now. If it's not Quinyon Mitchell that I'm trading up for, it's going to be Jared Verse. I think Jared Verse, you can add to that defensive line. Again, I think you and I both agree they need help up front on the defensive side. And this is a team that their philosophy is getting guys in the draft and having those guys be your strength, having those guys be your depth, having those guys really make impacts. And this is something we kind of touched on a little bit last week. I think you can get a guy in the draft and throw him on the edge, and that edge player can make an immediate impact. I think there are things that as he develops, he can fine tune and he'll get better. But I think early on, you can grab a guy, grab a very raw talent and throw him out there. And then you can rotate him in with some of the veterans that you have. You can have him play opposite of Aiden. Hey, look, Aiden's a dog. Aiden stepped in day one, and that's his spot. And the thing is, he's gotten better each year. I think we all agree Aiden was the right pick. I know that you were a guy who was big on Kayvon Thibodeau, but I think Aiden Hutchinson, specifically for this team and for the way this defense plays, he was the right pick for this team. And he's gotten better each and every year. I think you can go out and grab a guy like a Jared Verse. I would have a problem trading up for him either. I think you add him to that defensive front and makes an immediate impact. And look, I would have no problem going out and trading up for the edge rusher if one of the guys that we're going to talk about here a little bit later on, if he was added to this team. Now, you'd have to go and trade for him, but I think Legarius Sneed would look really, really good in some Honolulu blue, and I think it would really help shore up that back end of the defense. And if I told you we traded for Legarius Sneed and we were able to move up and get Jared Verse, I think you would have a completely different view of what this defense looks like, especially after they just re-signed a cornerback in Mosley and brought him back on a 1-year deal. I think you all of a sudden have a bit of a revamped, fresher defense that looks like it can get the job done. What do you think about the rumors and the speculation that this team might be in the mix for arguably the best cornerback in all of the NFL? A guy that just won a Super Bowl. So a guy who's been there, done that, has the experience, a guy that has no problem being put out on an island when your head coach wants to do nothing but bring blitzes, and has no problem being your number one. going heads up, going head on head, hat on hat with the number one wide receiver that is opposite of him, a guy in luxurious need who could come in, is going to command a lot of money. He is. You're going to have to trade for him, and then you're going to have to pay him. So the cost to get him is going to be expensive, but this is a guy who could really take your defense to the next level and really help settle things down in that secondary, especially if you've got a guy like Mosley who comes back and he's healthy. You can work him in with Cam Sutton, because look, Legarius Seed ain't coming off the field. And I think you could give Brian Branch a little bit more room. And I think all of a sudden you've got Iffy playing out there. I think your secondary becomes a bit of a dangerous no-fly zone where you're going to have quarterbacks scared to throw into that coverage. What do you think about trading for a guy like Legarius Need?
That's tough. The cost, where you got to redo it, a contract.
The cost will be expensive.
Yeah, the cost will be expensive. He's a good player, and you recognize, man, you know, the cornerback position is so tough, and it would fill a position of need. And you recognize, man, they need it so much. But I just don't think they'll do it. I don't think that's been the MO of the Lions and Brad Holmes, is to, one, give up capital and then extend a guy that's not on your team. And so that's what I'm so frustrated, is that cornerback spot. It's a big glaring position of need. You've added now a couple, you know, he's going through, you know, Dan Campbell's going through defensive backs coaches faster than you would have liked. Every season, got to get a new one. You can't get one that can kind of hold down the position. So is Aaron Glenn a taskmaster? Can't get somebody to do the job? Well, it's a tough position. And the one thing that frustrates me, and I'm going to get your opinion on it, is I just feel like you wasted a signing in Emmanuel Mosley. I know it's a nice guy. He hung around. People have asked me, do you think he's going to come back? Two ACL injuries, I think, is just really tough to kind of come back from. I know it's a 90-man roster, and it's just going to be a low-cost thing, but I would have went in a different direction. But it's just so difficult to be able to get a position that can tackle, play well, have veteran leadership, and can do everything that Aaron Glenn wants. He played the position. So Cam Sutton, I think, fairly safe to assume at the number two spot, probably will do better than where he was at in his first year in Detroit. I look at Legarius Need, I have to pass. I just think the cost is too much. I think you're looking more to really enhance the offense and then just try and get by and try to just do what you can with the defense. And obviously it comes with, I think, the mantra and the attitude of, if we improve the pass rush, we can improve the secondary. And that's why you bring back a Mosley and a Cam Sutton, and you draft one or two, and you go out in free agency and get one. I struggle, because a lot of people will say, well, go out and get Gilmore. I don't want guys in their 30s. I don't want guys that, you know, are 30 to 33 years old that are coming on looking for their third contract. I want a young guy. But those guys get locked up, you know, like a Jalen Johnson. Boom. The franchise tag. So that's what makes it tough. So in my mind, cuz, I'm thinking that the plan A now with the defensive back spot is stick with what you got and draft two of them. Two guys that you think you can develop and maybe get a third tier individual, maybe the Gilmores, you know, maybe someone affordable that comes along. But at the same token, it just kind of feels like, you know what? Bolster up the defensive line, bolster up the pass rush, and that'll help the secondary. But I think a high-priced cornerback like Legarius Need, I would pass on. What's your reaction to Emmanuel Mosley coming back? It's not going to be a big-time contract. And would you go out and bring back a blast from the past? Kind of signs, the tea leaves are pointing to CeeDee Deuce maybe not coming back with the Lions, which I think is probably the right decision. Would you bring back Quandre Diggs just as a depth piece in terms of a safety? I think you got two good ones in Kirby Joseph and Ifeatu Melifonwu, but a veteran like that, that maybe can teach these guys some new tricks of the trade, I think would be positive. I know that he's older, 31, but I think that if he wants to make one more run at it, that'd be kind of a full circle moment, bringing back a guy from the Quinn era that got unceremoniously booted when he started talking about how poor Matt Patricia was.
Yeah, for sure. And that would be, look, I would have no problem with Quandre Diggs coming back. Quandre Diggs was a guy who I didn't even want to go away when they traded him. He was a guy who I thought had a lot left to give to this team. I thought he was a really solid player. So I wouldn't have a problem with bringing him back. Again, he would be a guy who would be a depth piece. He's not coming in to be your starter. I think you've got your starters already on this roster. And I agree with you with CeeDee Deuce. I think his time here has kind of come and gone. I think he was good for what he was good for. And I wish him the most success, but I just don't need him back on this team. As far as Emmanuel Mosley goes, I really think what this signing will come down to is two things. One is, how healthy will he be throughout the season? Will he be able to give you 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21 games? Will he be able to give you a full season? Or is this going to be a guy who is going to go out there in two plays in, he's going to suffer another devastating injury? Because if it's going to be the latter, I don't need that. I don't want that. You're just kind of taking up a roster spot, and we can allocate that money to somebody else. And that's where I'm at with the other point, is really and truly, it's going to be, how much is he going to cost? How much is he going to take up? And could that money have been spent someplace else? At the time that we're recording this, I don't think we have the details on the salary. We do know it's a 1-year deal, but it's one of those things where if he's going to cost you $5-6 million, I'm going to need you to be really, really, really good at your position, and I'm going to need you to perform at your position. I can't have you going down with another torn whatever. So, to me, it is. What do you get out of him, and how much does it cost for him? I don't necessarily have a problem with them bringing him back, but I need him to be healthy, and I need the contract to fit. Look, I would love for them to bring in L'Jarius Sneed. I think it would be fantastic, but I think you're right. The price tag on him is going to be too high. And if you kind of read the tea leaves and you listen to what Brad Holmes and you listen to what Dan Campbell have said all throughout this shortened offseason that the Lions have had, because they've had a great run in the playoffs, they are all about drafting their own guys, developing these guys, and then re-signing these guys. I mean, we haven't even talked about Amon-Ra St. Brown possibly getting $28 million. And that's the rumor of what his contract extension is going to be when he signs that, probably later on this week or maybe sometime into the next week or two. But this is it's one of those things where I would love for them to go out and get it, but I just don't think this team is going to do it. And look, I would be going as far as willing to trade that first round pick if I had to, because I think he would be that important to this defense. I think he would be that important to this team. I think it would make this team that much better. And he brings that Super Bowl experience. He brings that playoff swagger. And he's a dude who is a legitimate shutdown corner. You look across the league at this moment in time, there are really only two of those guys. One is Sauce Gardner. The other is L'Jarius Sneed. These guys don't fall off trees. A lot of times you'll get a guy like an Emmanuel Mosley, or you'll get a guy like a Cam Sutton, who are good and they're serviceable, but they're not L'Jarius Sneed good. It's completely different. So I would be willing to do it, but I don't think the Lions will do it. As far as L'Jarius Sneed goes, again, it's going to depend on what that contract is and if he has the ability to stay healthy. This is a guy who's already lost two seasons of his career, last year and the year prior to that. So it'll be interesting to see what the Lions are able to do with him.
Okay, so I'll ask you, because it's – now this is far-fetched, guys. I'm not doing it for clicks for all you dumbass haters out there that think that. And I'll share a funny story about our Twitter page and clowning on haters, which is really funny. But would you, straight up, if the deal is, hey, Kansas City, Veach calls Holmes and he's like, all right, we don't got to do no capital. Give me Jameson Williams. You get L'Jarius Sneed, straight up. Would you do it?
Done. Done. Done deal.
Really?
What does Jameson Williams really give you on a season? I think what he had, what was it, like 400 yards?
Yeah.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, in a heartbeat, dude. On top of that, I trust Brad Holmes to go out there and find me a wide receiver in the seventh round if he has to.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think you'd be giving up potentially the next, you know, guy.
You want Tyreek? Go ahead. Go ahead. Take Tyreek. That's what the comparison's going to be. Go ahead. Take him.
Not Tyreek. No, because I think it could be the next T. Higgins or Jamar Chase or somebody that can be impactful. I think these guys, I think it's coming. I think that if he's competitive, then here's the guy with speed.
I have to give up a guy who is arguably a top, we'll say, 75 wide receiver for arguably a top two cornerback. Done.
Okay.
Done. I don't even have to think about it. Done. Let's go.
Let's go win a Super Bowl. You know what?
We're on our way, baby.
Devalue that position. Upgrade the defensive line. And I say that's why I lit up the internet with my take last week of getting Keon Coleman. Now, of course, it's selfish. I saw the man play. I saw the man beat Michigan. And I saw the man dominate for Florida State. So there's a little bit of bias there. But the funny part is that people think that the questions I've been asking for 10 years are for clicks. Guys, you reveal how dumb you are to me when you say to me online, oh, you're just writing it for clicks. You don't click anything on Twitter other than the stories. So when I ask a question, it's just literally this one, the one where I asked if Blake Corum was better than Craig Reynolds. Saturday, I took my daughter to her first college basketball game. I was sitting at Alta, and I was looking and reading about Blake Corum, and she's shopping, and I'm doing the both where I'm paying attention to make sure she doesn't blow out the budget. But she's great. You know, she'll go shopping and end up spending like 30, 35 bucks. She doesn't blow out the budget, which is great. So I'm sitting there at Alta, and I'm just like, you know what? I'm just going to tweet this. And my tweet was, is Blake Corum better than Craig Reynolds? No thought. Of course there's no thought to it. I mean, it's just something that this is the premise of how we started this project is water cooler talk. And again, on Twitter, you don't click anything when you answer somebody's question. You sound stupid. So all you're going to get from me is corny ass, dumb ass answers like, yeah, I did it for clicks, or yeah, I did it. Like it got literally and it's always true. The shit that gets 200,000 views is the shit that just comes off the top of my head where I'm just tweeting it, half not paying attention. Guys, come on. Let's be serious here. The stuff that's serious shows up on the podcast or the website. The shit that happens on Twitter is just me being a nonsensical sports guy trying to drum up shit to read. And you guys always come through. Some people said, yeah. Some people said, well, he is better, but we don't want to take a third round pick. That's all I'm looking for. So for the guy that's just wanting to hammer me and saying we're going to fall off the map or thinking I'm the bastion of journalism from my Twitter page, it is pure comedy, always makes me laugh. And again, when you debate me regarding the Detroit Sports Podcast going away, where are we going to go? We own the thing. Adam and I own the thing. We have the Twitter page. Maybe you think that I'm going to say something one day to get us booted off, which may happen, but
we've been here for years. We haven't gone anywhere yet.
It's been 11 years and over 130,000 tweets. So far, so good. And I think Elon is on my side now with free speech. So we can pretty much say anything. Like on Monday, I'm posting shit about an explosion near my community. So it's been more fun to be on Twitter. So I just think that it's funny. Guys, I really think you should just stop saying that I do it for clicks. I just do it to fuck around. I mean, we want to talk sports. It's somewhat realistic, somewhat fun. And again, all you got to do for those that want to put me on the pedestal of carrying the torch for journalism, the first word on our Twitter page is entertainment. That's what we're trying to do here is have fun, laugh, clown around. And so far for 11 years, if I think it, I tweet it. Half of it is stupid. Half of it's serious. Half of it's just me making up shit. You know, when you say I'm hearing that Juwan Howard is taking therapy for leadership, it's probably not true because the man can't lead. So, so have a good time with it. Don't be so serious. I mean, these bastion of journalists, man, they're very, very serious. But you came up with a mock draft, and it's a good one. Tell us what you brought to the table, and let's debate in our last 5 minutes. Which mock draft are we going to review in our annual look at the pundits' mock drafts?
So this is a mock draft that was posted on March 4th by Kyle Stackpole from CBS. CBS pumps these things out so much. They put out like six of them a day. The mock draft
channel.
Yeah, for sure. And basically the discussion is how would the rest of the draft shape out if we had four quarterbacks go in the top four positions. So to give you a heads up on kind of how this plays out. So round one, pick one, Caleb Williams. Drake May goes pick two. Jaden Daniels goes pick three. And the guy who has everybody split is pick four, J.J. McCarthy. There's a projected trade between the Arizona Cardinals and the New York Giants. Giants move up to get J.J. McCarthy as their quarterback. After that, some interesting notes. They've got Marvin Harrison going five to the Chargers. Dallas Turner, who could be an edge rusher, who could be incredibly impactful. This is that trade between the Giants and the Arizona. This is the Arizona Cardinals not coming back for their pick. They grab Dallas Turner there. And then Malik Nabers, he's a wide receiver. He goes at eight to Atlanta. Rome Adunze, he goes at pick nine to Chicago. So some stuff to be concerned with there. Chicago getting their quarterback and now getting a wide receiver for that quarterback. Rome Adunze was an absolute stud last year. Tyrion Arnold, the guy who I just talked about, he goes to Minnesota at 11. Brock Bowers is a big name, goes to Denver at 12. Nobody's really sure who the hell their quarterback's going to be. Quinyon Mitchell, a guy who I'm really high on, he goes at pick 13 to the Las Vegas Raiders. And then we kind of work our way through this draft. We get the pick 16, Jared Verse, another big name that we've been talking about. He goes to Seattle at 16. You've got a guy who you're high on, Jackson Powers Johnson. He goes to Pittsburgh at 20. And basically what they say here is easy one. Steelers select the Oregon Mauler to replace the recently released Mason Cole. So if he's good enough to play for the Steelers, he should be good enough to play for your line. So Doc has an eye for talent there. Another guy who's talked about in these parts a lot is a Penn State product, Chop Robinson, edge rusher. He goes to Philadelphia at the 21st pick. Nate Wiggins, he's a speedy cornerback. He goes to Houston at 22. Now we're getting close to the Detroit Lions here. Green Bay at pick 25, they take Cooper DeJean, cornerback. It's a guy who I think a lot of us know about. Again, Iowa product, a guy who fits a position of need for this team, a guy who is highly thought of. All right, as we work our way down the draft, Xavier Worthy, speedy wide receiver. He goes at pick 28. He goes to Buffalo, just what Buffalo needs, another speedy wide receiver, right? Pick 29. So the Detroit Lions are now on the clock. And the Detroit Lions submit their card for Kool-Aid McKinstry, cornerback out of Alabama. It says the Lions make Kool-Aid McKinstry the second Alabama defensive back off the board to help improve their secondary. According to CBS's ranks, he is the fourth best cornerback in this draft. He is a top 25 prospect. Now, still on the board in this draft, you've got Darius Robinson, who goes at pick 31 to San Francisco. You got Ladd McConkey, who's a wide receiver, who goes to Georgia at 32. He goes to Kansas City. Also, Tyler Guyton goes to Baltimore, one pick after Kool-Aid's pick, at pick 30. He is the Oklahoma offensive tackle. They have him rated as the sixth best offensive tackle. A little insight on Tyler Guyton, one of the better offensive tackles in the class, falls right to the Ravens' lap. Ronnie Stanley and or Morgan Moses could be cap casualties this offseason, so Tyler Guyton makes a lot of sense. We've talked about the Lions possibly moving away from Taylor Decker, possibly looking to add some depth to that offensive line, building upon that strength. So you've got that there. We've talked about the Lions possibly adding to that defensive front. Darius Robinson, Detroit kid, goes to San Francisco at 31. Those are two picks I feel that could help improve this Detroit defense. Instead, they take Kool-Aid McKinstry. Would you be okay if the Detroit Lions selected Kool-Aid McKinstry at 29 instead of addressing an obvious strength of this team, the offensive line, or adding to a position where an immediate impact could be felt by adding a guy like Darius Robinson at edge? And that would also help that back end, especially after you just signed Emmanuel Mosley, who is probably going to slot in as your number one cornerback, possibly. Would you be okay with that, adding Kool-Aid?
Like, yeah. Prior to the combine, I would be okay with it. But the combine kind of wasn't his best showing, and an injury revealed. I look at it and I say, you know what? Mock drafts are interesting. We never hate on any mock drafts, but also a key when you guys are evaluating our mock drafts at all, Lions or anybody that puts one out, is who was left and who was available. If you got Darius Robinson on the board, you take him, you run up and you get him. He declares himself the best. He's from Southfield, so he's got that built-in hunger. Could you imagine on one side, Darius Robinson, and the other, Aiden Hutchinson? You mix in James Houston. Oh, my goodness. I just think that, I can share, we're efforting Darius Robinson on the All Lions podcast, but I got the, oh, we're interested. And then you message post-combine, oh, he's training for the draft. Hit us up near the draft or pro day. And I'm like, no, it's the same formula all the PR people do with me is, oh, thank you for reaching out. We love your project. We love your podcast. Hit us up after the combine. You hit him up after the combine. Oh, hit us up near pro day. I'm like, it's just 15 minutes. I'm not looking for his whole life and soul. It's the same playbook every year. And I got to try to find a way to break the cycle of the now, because you know what level we're at now? Which now has to be something that is either shown or people don't like my face. Now we're at the level where agents are reading All Lions and listening to the podcast, and they'll be like, I know you wrote about Kirby Joseph and his online gaming habits, and I guess that's what you're into, but are you interested in promoting this with Kirby Joseph? And then, or they'll say, oh, you know, you said this on your last broadcast about this, you know, okay. I'm like, oh yeah, that's great. I'd love to have Kirby on. Yeah, I'm not really into him promoting something in Ann Arbor, but you know, here's how we can kind of do it professionally. And then what happens, cuz? The agents ghost me. Literally, it's 100%. They reach out, they're getting my number. They want to have a conversation. There is something in the pipeline that is blocking it, because then I go, okay, I want to follow up. And then I'm ghosted. I'm like, what the f-? It is crazy. So it's a funny, before we would email agents or text agents and we get nothing. Now we're at level one, I guess, where they reach out and then they go, oh shit, what the hell are these guys going to talk about? He's like, I don't want this guy asking me. Or someone's telling him, look, this guy's going to ask questions that are going to look for attention. Don't go on the show. But I don't know. But it's funny. It's a different level. But it is universally hilarious that that's what's happening right now. Look, cuz, in my opinion, defensive line makes me happy. Defensive line, offensive line. This is one of those drafts where I want Brad Holmes to kind of be the true villain. Here's what I want. Not that it's mean, and I guess it would be self-serving, but could you imagine 300,000 people, 100,000 Lions fans, they're waiting, 11:30, with pick 29, da-da-ding, da-da-ding, we have a trade. Brad Holmes gets another second rounder, another third rounder, and trades back into the second round. Could you imagine all the people waiting 4 hours, maybe all day? Literally, people will probably get there 9 a.m., will have been there 14 hours. Could you imagine Brad Holmes? And look, he's not going to make decisions based on the crowd. He's going to make it based on his board and seeing if he can get people where he wants with value, maybe get more capital. Could you imagine people waiting all day for the Lions to pick and they don't pick day one? I think it'd be crazy. And for the chaos that it could ensue, and plus people would be drinking, you know, it might cause a scene, so maybe you don't want that. But man, because there's a lot of different things that Brad Holmes can do. But I just think cornerback, for me, until I just have to have one guy come in that gets drafted in the first round in Detroit and shine. So off the bat, any cornerback's probably going to get a C+, B- grade off the bat, no matter who it is, unless it's Kenyon Mitchell, because the man is legit. So that's how I look at it. How do you look at it? And do you see? Because I'm sure we're going to find more mock drafts that involve trading and moving around and things like that. It maybe has an opportunity to actually happen. Do you think?
Yeah, Brad Holmes would pull the trigger? Yeah, I feel the same way you do. I don't want the cornerback once it's Kenyon Mitchell.
Yeah.
I want help up front. So I want the D-end, if the D-end's available.
Yeah.
Probably similar to what we talked about earlier. If Brad Holmes is willing to go all gung-ho and there's a guy he really likes, I want to see him move up for it. Trade what you got to trade. Go get that guy who's going to make an immediate impact on this team. You know, I was just looking at some comparables between Jared Verse and Aiden Hutchinson, and they are extremely similar. There's also a couple of guys in this draft who are just athletic freak shows that you could add to that defensive front, pair with Aiden Hutchinson, and just let them run wild and let them cause havoc. And I would love for him to go out and do that. I don't want to see the cornerback added unless the guy's going to make an immediate impact. And that's the problem with cornerbacks. They usually don't make that immediate impact. They need a year of seasoning. I think Kenyon Mitchell is a guy who could step into the league day one and make an immediate impact. But that's why I'm more pro taking that first pick at 29 and trading it for a guy like Legarius Sneed. I know that the ramifications of that is it's going to cost you quite a bit with your salary, but I'm more pro that because he's going to step in day one and start making immediate impacts. I just don't like trading for cornerbacks, especially look, I think Kool-Aid's fine, but I don't know if he's going to translate to be that guy at that next level. And with that first round draft pick, I kind of want a guy who's going to be that guy, a guy who can step in day one and help transform this defense. So I'm in lockstep with you. I don't want them really drafting Kool-Aid. I'd much prefer the D end. Again, it's a position I feel like you can step in day one and you can make an immediate impact, really help bolster that front of that defensive line, which in turn makes the secondary better.
And that was a great hour. Always enjoy ripping it up and letting it rip with my guy, Adam, the Jock Strozinski. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at AdamRStroz. Make sure you follow the network at Detroit Podcast. Let us know what you think of any of our questions, any of our commentary, any of our podcasts. Let us know. Got a great thing going. Always enjoy the opportunity to break down the world of sports. And in the coming weeks, we're going to look at the Tigers. Cheap Chris Illich doing his thing again and letting some real talented individuals go by the wayside. We'll talk about that, what our expectations are for the Tigers, the Wings. Hopefully they rebound after a tough week and get back after it. Maybe the DSP curse will work in reverse, where now that we've talked a little bit more critically, maybe they'll come back and have a good week. Because that was a great hour. I look forward to the next edition of Doc and Jock on the Detroit Sports Podcast Network.